A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 4, 2000, entitled, I Wish Someone Had Told Me That. Or did they? The texts for the sermon are Hosea 11, verses 1 through 9, Luke 24, verses 50 through 53, and Romans 8. Verses 31 through 39. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
This morning I want to speak to you graduates. You got sort of off on my right. I would expect you to be left-leaning, but nevertheless, know that these remarks are you, but the congregation is invited to listen in because there may be a thing or two for them as well. But even though I'm not looking at you all the time, I have you in my focus, okay? You see, I thought in this year 2000, when you get a diploma, I got a Medicare card. And I think that sort of qualifies me as a sage, you know? Now with a Medicare card, I'm sort of a sage. I've got a lot of wisdom. And I just thought there were some things that I would like to share with you. In fact, they're the things that I wish somebody had told me. Or did they? There's some things that I wish that someone had told me as I was growing up. Some things that could have saved me some anxiety and some mistakes. Some things I wish I had known. I wish someone had told me that. Or did they? Maybe they did, because you don't always listen, nor did I. And sometimes the wisdom that flows, you know, covers you over, sort of just rolls off your back. And later on, maybe, this conversation will come into focus. I have no illusion that just another sermon is going to change your life. But I didn't think you really wanted another sermon either. So I thought I'd just tell you some things that I wish somebody had told me. Or if they did, I wish I had caught on to it, okay? At this commencement season, I am aware of the fact that these young people and countless others across the country receive all kinds of encouragement, challenge, motivational speeches. We'll hear from presidents and generals and all kinds of significant people who will address all kinds of graduating classes and all phases of education in these days. We'll get little snippets on the television news. And by and large, there'll be words of encouragement. There'll be words of motivation to achieve, to pursue your goals, pursue your dreams, and to work hard and to accept the challenge of life. And that's good, because it is true that you will kind of slide through if you could. And you also do respond to challenge when it's significant and meaningful. So I think all of that is good. But I also had the strong feeling as I contemplated Baccalaureate Sunday that we do put a lot of pressure on our graduates. And as parents and as pastors and as teachers, we create a lot of pressure for them, and we're not always totally honest with the way life really is. There are some things we don't tell you. And I thought that this morning I'd like to just tell them some things that I wish that I had understood. It's a little different from the voices you're going to hear at this time of graduation. I hope you get a lot of challenge, a lot of encouragement. I hope you're stirred and motivated. But this is going to be an alternative voice. I'm going to say to you, first of all, what I wish someone had said to me: relax a little bit and take time to live, and don't let the pressure squeeze you into a mold, meeting everybody else's expectations. The expectations of all the people in your life that are important and society in general. Take some time to live. Have a bit of humor about your life. Relax a little bit. Let up a little bit. I suppose there's not another church in the country that would ever print that poem on the front of its liturgy by Jenny Joseph about wearing purple. But it suggests, the poet suggests, that when she gets old, she's going to wear purple. And she's going to do all kinds of outrageous things, all kinds of silly things, all kinds of foolish things. And the only reason that poem sells, the only reason we read it and we smile at it, is because in all of us, we spend an awful lot of time toeing the mark, living up to expectations, doing the thing that is, well, it's wise and respectable and responsible. And in all of us, there's a little something that needs to break out of that once in a while. And I thought to myself, if the poet is going to wear purple and be outrageous when she's old, she does suggest that maybe you ought to start practicing. She ought to start practicing. So it wouldn't be such a shock when she got old. And it occurred to me that we're not always honest with our children and our youth. And we push pretty hard. And our society creates a lot of pressure on young people. I think they're working very hard. I'm very impressed with what our young people are doing these days. And I think it even goes farther than that. There are probably a few baby boomer parents that need to hear what I'm going to say this morning also. And that is that we can get into a kind of drivenness mode of achieving and succeeding. We are bombarded by the media with the fact that we ought to be consumers. We ought to purchase and possess and acquire. And there is a groundswell in our society, I sense. And it's not easy to live up to, not easy to meet the expectations. And we start with young people like this when we simply try to push them and not say to them, once in a while, it's okay to wear purple and to dance in the rain and to do something foolish. Just for the sake of it. Because it's a part of living. And God knows it's not easy. And you're going to have to be responsible and work hard and do all of that that you've been encouraged to do by the many voices that you've heard. And that's all good. But hear me this morning. Don't be driven. Learn to relax. Learn to live fully. And let that whole beautiful person you are come to blossom. There's another thing I want to say. I wish someone had told me. Don't expect that you are going to acquire truth with a capital T. Don't ever expect in whatever field you go or in whatever kind of life you lead that you're going to have truth, absolute truth, in your possession. Because being human, that is impossible. And I wish someone had told me that. Because I was trying to nail it down, to get it right, to have all the ducks in line. I thought that I could come to a possession of the truth and stand in the truth. I wish somebody had told me that's not possible. It's not possible because of the nature of our human experience. I mean, we are people in process. We are a part of a cosmic process. We're a part of an evolving process with a new emerging reality all the time. And for God's sake, it is 15 billion years already. And who knows where it's going? And if we are in a process, and we are creatures in process, if we are people on the way, as we certainly are, then we do not possess absolute truth. And that means that we ought to live with an open mind for expanding knowledge and humility before the things we don't know. Let me give you an example. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I was invited to be a part of the Diversity Day at Grand Haven High School. And that was a stellar event in which some of you were exposed to the diversity of race, of culture, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion. It was exactly the kind of thing that you should be exposed to, because you are entering a world that is full of diversity. And a diversity comes closer to home all the time. And I mention this as an illustration, because in a local newspaper, we're carrying on a battle of words about the fact that that shouldn't have been done. And of course, the sticking point is the question of sexual orientation. These young people should not be exposed to the fact that sexual orientation is a given of our human nature. The scientists are studying it. All the information isn't in. It certainly is obvious to anybody that has an open mind at all that sexual orientation is a part of the constitution of the human being, and it is as diverse as our people. And yet you would think by reading the newspaper that you could quote a Bible verse that seems to condemn a same-sex union, and that God has spoken and that's all there is to it. And that really isn't the case at all. And the problem, you see, is that this Bible is used as some kind of absolute rule book that has information in it. Rather than recognizing this book as an ancient book, a marvelous book of the story of the spiritual experience of people, the people of Israel and the people who followed Jesus, as a record of their experience, their encounter with God, their devotion to God, instead of recognizing that, it becomes a kind of moral guidebook with rules in it. Now, the Bible says a lot about your sexuality. It says it to all of us, no matter what our orientation may be. It says, be faithful and responsible in the exercise of this wonderful gift. But the questions that we are aware of in our day about sexual orientation, it wasn't even in the purview of this book. It doesn't address it at all. Of course there were abusive sexual practices then, and they were condemned, and there is abuse of sexuality today, and it should be condemned. That has nothing to do with whether a person is homosexual or heterosexual or somewhere in between. And to refuse to know that, to admit that, is simply to close your mind to what is obvious for all of us. And so, one would live in ignorance. And one living in ignorance could become arrogant. And when ignorance and arrogance combine, the potential for violence is there. This is not a sermon about sexual orientation. Don't forget my point. You are never going to have absolute truth with a capital T. I use the other only as an illustration of the disruption and the disharmony and the alienation and the violence that can occur when people think they have the absolute truth spoken by God, rather than recognizing that we are people on the way, but that knowledge is expanding, and we must be open to new knowledge and then change our mind where necessary, but always be humble, because the capital T truth is God's never the possession of a human. Dear God, I wish someone had told me that. There's another thing, somewhat related, and that is that life isn't neat. It's complex and full of ambiguity. It's not simple to find your way. It's not easy to be human. It's full of questions. And if we're honest, it's full of struggle and wrestling within. And I use as an example of this my hero, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was executed by the Nazis in 1945, just before the camp where he was incarcerated was liberated. Now, Bonhoeffer was a pastor and a theologian. And he was really, in his heart, he was a pacifist. He really believed to follow Jesus was to be nonviolent. But he was in that situation of the rise of Hitler, of Nazism. He recognized that if Nazism was to prevail, Western civilization would be lost. And so Bonhoeffer, as a pacifist, made a decision to join a conspiracy to kill Hitler. Now, do you see the conflict? I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in violence. And now I join a conspiracy to kill the head of state, which is treason as well as murder. Can't you see the conflict? Can't you see that this man wrestled within himself? He has this strong conviction about being nonviolent, and yet he sees what he has to do. He has to act. In the human arena, you're going to have to act. And you're not always going to know that it's exactly this or that. You are going to have to act with limited knowledge and limited insight, and sometimes you're going to make a mistake and you're going to do it wrong. Because life is difficult and life is complex and life is full of ambiguity. And you have to act without knowing everything. And you can't know everything, but you have to follow your conscience and follow your heart and do what you think you have to do, knowing that it's a judgment call. Read Bonhoeffer's poem in the back of the liturgy, Who Am I? This brilliant, brilliant, deeply spiritual person. Was he cocksure, self-righteous? Not at all. He said, Who am I? Those in the prison whose life he lighted up because he led them in prayers and worship, they admired him, they respected him. He was a fragrant presence there, but he said, they think of me that way, but who am I? Am I that, or am I what I feel inside me with all the struggle and all the distress and all the turmoil of my soul? Am I a hypocrite? Am I one thing one day, one thing another day? And finally, O Lord, Thou knowest I am thine. But I'll tell you what, that came out of the cauldron. That came out of struggle. Because life isn't easy. The corners aren't neat. Loose ends aren't all tied up. And you're going to have to live with that. And that brings me to just a final word about God. I put some things in the liturgy in the insert from St. Augustine, Thomas Merton. Bob read from Thomas Merton this morning, Words of Grace. Elizabeth Barrett Browning. I wish somebody had told me that God was in everything and present to me in every moment and every experience. Don't get me wrong. I had a deeply sensitive and devoted home and church, and I'm grateful for that. But what I'm saying is that the impression of God I had was like kind of a a super moral policeman up there keeping records, and I felt like, well, even St. Paul said that we come into this world at enmity with God. I felt there was a sort of an adversarial relationship over against God, and that if I didn't keep in the tracks pretty well, I would incur guilt, and then I'd be alienated from God. And it seemed to me there was an awful lot of that in my nurture, my growing up. And I don't know how to tell you something different, except that I don't know how important God is to you right now. But God will become important to you, and when that moment comes, I want you to know that it's the God of Hosea, the Hebrew prophet, who spoke about Israel and Israel's rebellion and their disobedience and all of that, even though God had tenderly nurtured them and cared for them. And in this very human presentation of God, the prophet speaks of God as being angry with them. And then, however, the prophet has this deep, deep insight. For he puts these words in God's mouth: "How can I give you up, O Israel? How can I give you up? I should give you up, but how should I give you up? I can't give you up because I love you. The cosmic lover. I'll never give you up. I can't give you up. I'll never abandon you. I don't care where your road takes you, what experiences you have. Remember Hosea's God. Because Hosea got it right in the midst of a lot of other stuff. For he spoke of the God who is a lover, who will never let you go, and is as present to you as your breath is in some burning bush or flaming sunset or in some human relationship in which you find yourself made whole. In all of that, God is. God is the God that Paul pictures in the 8th chapter of Romans, who is for you. If God is for us, who can be against us? And then he gives us that picture, which you hadn't ought to literalize, but the picture of Jesus who dies, is crucified, risen, ascended, and sitting at the throne of God and making intercession for us. In other words, you've got an advocate at the throne of power of the universe. That's the picture. That's the image. But the idea of it is that there is something in the heart of things that is for you, on your side, that'll never let you go. Nothing can ever separate you from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. I don't care how ambiguous your situation, how poor your judgment, what wrong path you may take, how much you stand in confusion before all of the options that hit you in your life. God is with you, will be with you, will never let you go. And so, I sort of knew that, but God wasn't so user-friendly for me. And I want you to know, no adversarial relationship between you and the Creator of the heavens and the earth. And so relax a bit. Open your mind to truth wherever you find it. Act in your life according to your vision and your values in the midst of the ambiguity in which you don't always know the answers. And love God. Love God. because you are loved of God. And that'll never change. And it's the greatest thing in the world. God bless you.